EarnThis.net interviews Dave Elkins. Take one.
So, good morning, Dave Elkins. Let's kick things off with what has to be the biggest news of the moment, the Everglow 10th anniversary tour coming soon from May. That was just announced a couple weeks ago, and it's been a little while since all you guys have been together. So how did that happen? How did this plan come together?
That's a good question. It's been a long time coming, and it's been a slow train coming as well. We got together, not all five of us, but actually staggered. I got to hang out with each one of the guys when I was home for Christmas, home being Virginia, which is where the band's from originally, and where three out of five of us still live. I live in Nashville, and Jacob, our drummer, lives in Brooklyn, and the other three guys currently live in Virginia Beach. And we were all home for the holidays, and we had some hangs. Some of them were just circumstantial, and ended up being that when we got together and we kind of reminisced on the quote-unquote good old days and, you know, just talking about what we're all doing individually these days, whether it be music-related or not, kind of got us sort of looking at each other like, you know, there seems to be some unfinished business here. And, you know, I think that all of us were sort of hesitant to maybe individually take the first step, you know, just trying to see, kind of almost feel each other out and see, you know, if I say that I want to do this, are you going to say you want to do this too? And, you know, three of us are married now. And like I said, we all live in, at least, you know, amongst the five of us, we live in different parts of the country. And so it makes things like rehearsals and even just spending time together, you know, planning things out and getting creative and dreaming up scenarios within the band. It makes it, you know, a lot more difficult than it was over a decade ago. But we had it while we were all together. At least the seed was planted back then. And then it didn't take much longer before we all scheduled to get on a call together, and I was really excited about the idea. So I, you know, as soon as I brought it up about us getting together and playing shows and celebrating the anniversary of the Everglow, I sort of wanted to just run with it. In fact, I wanted to do something somewhat similar for Destination Beautiful's 10th anniversary. Back in 2013.
You guys actually played a couple of shows for that, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We played two in our hometown, and we played one here in Nashville. And that was it. I was honestly wanting us to do something a little more on a grand scale, maybe play as many as 10 shows throughout the country or even more. Just depending on who wanted to go and, you know, keep it sort of like an event and not turn it into a normal, by May standards, full U.S. tour. But just see where the interest was and, you know, try to get back on, you know, together and get back on the road to play a few shows. But it just, the timing wasn't right. And the timing for the band wasn't right and the timing for us individually just, it just didn't work out for us to do that. So, I mean, in my own way, I've been wanting to get us all back together since 2013, at least to do something more than the way we ended. Because the farewell tour was great for us, but since it was the first time that Rob and Mark had been back in the band in a number of years, there was a chemistry that was realized that in some cases, it wasn't realized the whole time that the five of us were a unit. And it was just a little, it was too little too late. So as we were sound checking our way through our farewell tour and we were, you know, jamming on songs that weren't part of our set, but, you know, were part of the May catalog. And then sometimes we would jam on something brand new and Rob would come up with a piano line or something and play it during sound check, and I'd jump in and play on guitar. You know, it's just like there's still such a clear chemistry amongst the five of us. And, you know, that was apparent, and I think we've all sort of been craving it in pockets, but real life and responsibilities and distractions and other things that we just want out of life have kind of come in between that. And with the Everglow tour, it kind of made perfect sense because, one, I knew that I wanted it, and I knew that everybody individually wanted it a little bit because I had talked with everybody individually. And I kind of figured that our fans would want it since the Everglow, at least by, like, commercial standards, is May's most successful record, and I know it means a lot to different people. And just kind of wanted to use that as the fuse, sort of, to, you know, put it all back together and ignite it up.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed in sort of the last 3-4 years since that farewell tour, whenever one of you guys gives an interview, like, someone always asks, like, man, I miss May so much ever since they broke up. And the answer is like, wait, we never broke up. That didn't happen. We never actually disbanded. And then now you guys have advertised 3 shows so far with more to come. 3 Everglow shows that are all in the first week of 2015. And I know at least 2 of them are sold out already. So that's got to be an encouraging response that the fan base has not gone anywhere.
Yeah, it really, it's incredibly encouraging. You know, speaking on behalf of myself, I've lived in Nashville for 3.5 years, and this is Music City, and, you know, the economy relies heavily on the music industry out here. There are studios everywhere. Everyone is studying or interning or, you know, aspiring to do work in the industry. Writers' rounds and, you know, playing at local bars all the way up to, you know, opening up for your favorite artist at the Ryman Auditorium, the birthplace of the Grand Ole Opry. And, you know, all this stuff is happening daily. There are more studios per square mile in this town than there are in any other part of the world. And so for me, I've spent the last 3.5 years, like, just looking at new ladders to climb. And I've kind of forgotten my role as Dave from May and have, you know, become Dave the producer, you know, Dave the idea with schematic or, you know, trying to learn new engineering techniques and catch up to where others around me are getting more skilled. I've forgotten what it's like to, you know, have been part of a unit that wrote music that people actually loved. I've forgotten that people got tattoos with lyrics to songs that we've written, or, you know, artwork, Everglow artworks, you know, tattoos of the kid or the couple, you know, those kind of things. I've forgotten that people have, you know, celebrated their wedding day or, you know, made May their newborn little girl's middle name or something. I've just forgotten that because, you know, there's so much going on musically in this town that it distracts you from remembering what you've done. And so I, you know, I didn't completely forget it, but I've forgotten a lot of it. And it was just so exciting once this thing was, like, in the bag and we were ready to announce it. And we had our Staged show. We put an online show for a site called Staged.com, and that was the plan was, you know, instead of just announcing a tour, instead of, like, booking 40 dates, we were just going to spend a long weekend in the studio together Our plan was to re-record a couple of songs for Destination B-Sides for that 10th anniversary and put that out on vinyl. And we'd play a stage it show, and that would sort of allow us to make the money that we would be spending to be in the studio, fly everybody out, and reconnect. And it would also be a way for us to gauge who was, you know, interested in what May was doing currently, and it was a good time to announce the Everglow tour. And so it was just like this kind of perfect storm for us, a very slow-moving wind, but at the same time enough for us to understand who's paying attention, who cares, because we write music for our own self-expression, but May got into a wonderful dream that became a reality where, like, we were making music for people and people were responding to it. And, you know, the Everglow was sort of like that season in May's career where, we were sort of firing on all cylinders. And I remember it very well these days because there's a lot of planning and a lot of preparation for the shows to be, you know, performed to the best of our ability. We've never done the record from start to finish more than twice. So this is going to be a big deal for us. And since we're doing it on a greater scale, we want to, pay extra special attention to the production of the tour and our performances. We'll be rehearsing for a very long time before the first show to make sure that we just, give our audience the best performance of the Everglow Live that we possibly can. But yeah, man, it feels really good, and I'm extremely grateful. And of course, I speak on behalf of all of us when I say we're super humbled and extremely grateful for the support.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I have to wonder about May. I'm looking back over the past few years, and the band played, like you said, a couple of shows for the 10th anniversary of Destination Beautiful, and then you guys just did this Stage It show, which was sort of billed as a 10th anniversary show for Destination B-Sides, and now we're going to get the 10th anniversary Everglow tour. So does this mean that then we can all go to sleep for a couple years, 2017 rolls around, the next big May show will be the 10th anniversary of Singularity?
Well, look, this is me dreaming on another level, and we're about to spend more time together than we have in years. We wrapped up our farewell in 2010, so by the time we pick up and start playing these Everglow shows, we're looking at about 5 years since we put full attention on the band. And the rest has been really good. And the experiences that we've all gained in the last 4 years, 5 years almost, have been they've been imperative to who we are individually and who we are as May, in a very big way. I've been doing a lot of production. I've been working in the studio more than I have when I was in a band for a decade. Jacob has been managing bands and networking and building nonprofits up that work with artists and corporations on a regular basis, and for initiative and poverty and education and all the things that May did in 2009. He's learned a lot since then. Zach's been pursuing his master's degree and putting out a solo project. He wasn't a singer at all, and he started singing backups for May, like out of necessity, desperation. I don't mean like we were desperate so we needed him to sing, but we just wanted to fill up our vocal parts, and he was willing to try it. And now he's reluctantly, but I think he's doing a great job. He's singing his way through his first solo EP, which I'm really stoked about. Rob and Mark, you know, they've been off on their own path, and they sort of existed as a nucleus, the three of us, Jacob, Zach, and I. But Rob and Mark have missed and craved May. And so we find ourselves, you know, on the other side of the stage at show, on the other side of this announcement of the Everglow Tour. Of course, there will be many more dates to come. It's just managing how to book them with all five of our schedules and at the right times in the right cities, the right venues, et cetera. But I don't want to live just being nostalgic in May. I love the idea of working on new stuff. I love the idea of putting out a new single or a new EP or even a new full-length record. And to answer your question, no, I don't see 2017 being the next time we get together and do something. In fact, the Everglow is sort of the album that if you asked, you know, May fans with their favorite record, I would assume that a majority would say the Everglow. And so this is a good time for us to re-engage and awaken our fan base. And it puts us in the same room more often than we have been in years. So in my perfect scenario, it's just a matter of time before we figure out how to be creative and record something in the midst of our collaboration and, you know, see with, like, very clear waters how we want to navigate through that. And I hope that's what happens. And, you know, the relationships amongst the five of us are becoming stronger than maybe they've ever been because there's perspective. When you don't have to put all of your eggs in the May basket, you don't grip it so tightly or hate it so much when it didn't work out the way that you needed it to. And you don't love it so hard that you exhaust the romance of that relationship. And so now we can look at it and just say, you know, this has served us well. We've learned a lot. We learned a lot through the band. We've learned a lot outside of the band. Where are our strengths and how can we cover up our weaknesses through unity of the five of us and what we're best at, which is, you know, creatively collaborating. And so I hope that there's, you know, new May music in the near future, and I hope that it's our best stuff, and I hope that people love it. And if all of that does happen, which that's a big if with a large question mark, maybe a few of them, then I think that the best May could be yet to come.
That's really beautiful. I've heard artists talk about their art in the past as if it's like their child, their baby, and that's sort of the attitude that I got out of that. Like, if you love what May has been and what it can be, you have to be able to let it go a little bit. You have to be a little bit more free with it to nurture and see what it could become in the coming years now.
Absolutely. I mean, I was 20 years old when our first record came out. I'm 32 now, and I was always, I always prided myself selfishly and immaturely as the youngest one in the band. And that just can sort of put it into perspective. I'm 10 years younger than Rob, our keyboard player. And so when you have a 20-year-old and an almost 30-year-old who's graduated from law school, hop into a van together and start pursuing a band, that dynamic just between two individuals is very strange. And you know, to think that we were by any means prepared for just that dynamic, let alone putting three other guys in it, calling it a band, touring the country, you know, turning just music that was more of like a fun little project into a career. You know, we didn't have an understanding of what it would take us as individuals to do in terms of compromise and sacrifice and hard work and determination. We just sort of blindly went into it. And thank God we did, because if we had thought about it a little harder, we probably wouldn't have made some of the decisions that we made that in some cases, you know, were some of the best we ever had. I mean, I have examples of just, you know, hitting the road on tour in 2003 and 2004, basically. We would leave the road, leave home in January, not come home until June. It's like playing shows 6 or 7 nights out of every week for 5.5 months. You know, I wouldn't do that for $1 million right now. Like, just say, okay, look, you got to play 300 shows a year for 2 years, and at the end of it, there's $1 million waiting for you. I'd be like, I got to find another way to make some money. That doesn't sound like a good idea to me. And of course, you know, the blind ambition that we all had was just like, it was a blessing, and then at times it became a curse. But what was made out of that is something that, yes, it's like, I mean, I don't have any kids yet, but it's like a child that, it's you create something that you love so much that it sort of stands in front of you and has its own character, its own life. You know, when they say that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that's definitely the case with probably most bands, if not all. And when it comes to May, that's exactly what it is. It's just like looking back and seeing what we've done and being, you know, very proud of a lot of it, having learned through the mistakes that were made in it, and having an understanding and a sense of clarity about who we are more as individuals, and if we came together, what that would be like today. That's just very exciting to me. And there are no strings attached now. You know, it's like I've got a studio. I've been producing out here in Nashville. I've been married for almost 5 years. I've got a different lifestyle than I had 10 years ago. And all those things, I think, make me a better asset to me. A little more even keeled, a little more balanced as a human being and as a man. And yet I crave, that inspired creativity with my brothers, in May, in some cases more than I ever did.
That's fantastic. So you did touch on, what some of the other guys in May have been up to sort of over the past few years. And I know that you have been absorbed in a massive project called Schematic, and it is many things. So for anyone who has not encountered Schematic, maybe you could lead off with sort of the elevator pitch, the big picture, what Schematic is.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll just do a little shameless plug and say that there's a record of my solo material, and the name under which the record was released, the album is called Color Inside the Lines, and I called my solo project Schematic, which is a little confusing, and at the time I was just sort of like trying to connect all things that I was doing under one moniker. But schematic to me, schematic means a plan or a diagram. And, you know, part of the reason why May took our break after our 2009 campaign and our farewell tour in 2010, we had gone from a band making a record in a shed to being signed to an independent label, to being signed to an independent label that owned our masters, that was owned by the conglomerate EMI, to then leaving our independent label with global and massive marketing and distribution, to hopping on to Capitol Records, where the Beatles were, and Radiohead and Coldplay and the Beach Boys and Frank Sinatra, and you know, just such a legacy of music that, you know, that basically defines rock and roll, and all genres, really, to seeing that label that we thought was like a giant, like the giant among giants, just crumble while we were on it. Decisions were made by the label that affected the band, that affected the band's creativity, and had nothing to do with the band, but because people were being fired at a percentage of like over 90%, the people who wanted May to be on Capitol Records were let go, and we didn't have any clout because we hadn't put out a previous record on Capitol. And the people that took over were just, you know, trying to make sure that their jobs were secure. And so the last thing they were going to do was be, you know, fight for a band that they inherited as a one, as opposed to one that, you know, they brought in themselves, or, you know, one, an artist that had already had a proven track record on a major label. And so we learned so much in the, like, 5 years, you know. The difference between a label owning your masters and you owning your masters means that over time you're going to make more money, which means that when you're a little more secure financially, you can make decisions on behalf of creativity, on behalf of the business of your band and of your brand, you know, with less desperation. You're not playing shows just so you can pay the bills. You play shows because you only want people to have an experience with you as you perform live that, you know, that they appreciate, hopefully they love, and you want to love it too, and you want to share that energy. Well, 2007, we put out our Capitol Records release, and everyone gets fired, and there's no money to spend even to send posters to the venues that we're playing ahead of time, so that way our tour is marketed. We just start learning a whole lot about what, you know, that simply the music industry is changing. It's changing very rapidly. And, you know, when May put out our first record, there was no MySpace. And then when May put out our second record, some bands didn't have a website. They only had MySpace sites because MySpace was the place to, you know, connect and, of course, connect with new music. And so now we have, you know, MySpace, you know, some people say MySpace is dead. MySpace is trying to make it as a, you know, a networking tool, an interactive tool for fans and music. And without getting on a MySpace kick or dissecting social networking, you know, it's just changed so much to where bands don't have labels like they used to. They use their own social networking and marketing to spread the word. They do crowdfunding instead of, you know, traditionally receiving an album budget or a fund. And that's just scratching the surface. I mean, there's so many tools available to an artist, whether it be a musical artist or any sort of creative arts artist, photography, writing, film, etc. And the waters are wide open, and yet there are some things that are sort of, I guess, even greater than fundamental as we approach. You know, we're all entrepreneurs that are trying to figure out how to use our talents and our creativity to make a living. We want to keep it as art, but at the same time, we want to see commercially where it could go. We hate calling it a product, but at the same time, that's what it is. And how can we learn how to protect our art? How can we learn how to protect our brands? How can we learn how to turn our, you know, maybe 15 minutes of fame or our, you know, our playing in front of 15 people in a room? How can we turn our playing in front of 1,500 people in a room? How can we turn getting paid $15 an hour to $1,500 a show, or how, you know, just basically how can we turn this into a career that has sustainability? How can we figure out how in its slower months, how to live off the richer months so that way we don't have to neglect, you know, our passion and our path for the sake of bill pay? There has to be some things that we learn along the way. We have to understand legally, you know, how to protect ourselves and how to get into the right scenarios when it comes to, if you're a songwriter, getting into publishing opportunities, how to submit your music. There's just an extensive list of things that artists either don't know when they sign contracts or do know but don't know well enough to make it, you know, work to the best of their abilities. And Schematic would be a place where we could all learn from each other, and we could invite Schematic would sort of be responsible, or very much responsible, for inviting people who have more experience than us. You know, if you want to understand, you know, what a publishing deal is, if you want to understand the difference between mechanical royalties and publishing royalties, if you want to know where the best place to go for vinyl distribution or manufacturing, if you want to understand how to get your record into stores when you're an independent artist. The list goes on. And I would love for Schematic to be a place where those questions are asked and the answers are shared and the networking grows and the dots are connected so that people in the art community can feel safe as they try to grow their business and their brand and understand that nature of it. You know, we can get so wide-eyed when some guy in a suit with a checkbook says, "Hey, I love your band, I want to sign you guys." And you're like, "Oh, well, we're playing our garage right now. So whatever you tell us to do, we'll do. Whatever contract you give us, we'll sign." And that's sort of been ruining bands for years. And, you know, we made some mistakes, or we figured out how to, as May that is, you know, did some things the right way accidentally, and some things the wrong way accidentally. Sometimes we purposely made the best decision on behalf of the five of us. Sometimes we purposely thought we were making the best decision on behalf of the five of us, but ended up being detrimental. So I'm just one perspective. I'd love to pool, you know, artists, musicians, attorneys, people who've worked at labels, people who've worked at marketing firms, PR firms, people who've worked at record stores, you know, booking agents, CPAs, A&Rs at labels, all these different types of people that have, you know, turned the wheels of the music industry over the years and give people who aspire to be in those places an opportunity to learn before they make mistakes. As many as they can, and be as educated as they possibly can before they move forward. And if Schematic could be that kind of online tool and community, then that would be my dream come true.
Hello. This concludes part one of the EarnThis.net interview with Dave Elkins. There's lots more to come in part two. See you then.